Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Bust it.
Went on to win last night. Indiana Pacers beating the Oklahoma City Thunder in the first game of the finals, 111-110. That right there is the full extent of how much I watched the game because it was intruding on the 10 o'clock news on Channel 3. So I got exactly what I needed. I got a dramatic moment, and that's all, you know, that's good enough for me.
Wait a second.
Did you watch the game, John?
Yes, we had picture in picture because
no, you're
course,
doing
the
both because the Cardinals
game.
Were on the other
yes,
screen. Yeah,
yeah,
and losing. Anyway, losing game two of the doubleheader.
Oh, I know.
But anyway, so you watched this game?
I did. The last thing that you're like, oh, I didn't Peter with the 10 o'clock news, and I'm like, you missed a great game.
Well, I missed a game.
I know.
And it looked like it was good at the end. So, okay. Good enough for me. 611 here on News Radio 92.3. Oh, my God. There's so much stuff going on. You got people in Okaloosa County throwing concrete off of the I-10 overpass and getting, looks like maybe we might have some arrests in this case. I'm amazed at this happening. It's always kids, almost always kids. It's like, do you not realize what, you know, when it goes into a car and it winds up in the seat next to somebody and, yeah, nobody got killed, but how easy it could have been, you know, either because you hit them or because they get scared and drive off the road or do something weird all of a sudden. I mean, I don't, you know, crazy things can happen when I got a window shot out of my car one time when I was driving on a country road, and I was just glad that, you know, I didn't get shot and I didn't wreck the car because you react weird to things like that. We've got a new Florida law, Michelle Salzman's. She was the sponsor. I think she was the sponsor. She was one of the key players in this. I think she was the sponsor of law. That's going to require driver's education in the classroom for teens in Florida. You remember how we had this conversation, John?
Oh, yes.
And both of us were like, wait, they don't right now?
Yeah, just recently going through it last year.
And many schools, especially many schools in Escambia County, do driver's training on the closed course, but they don't go out on the street, which is that's like step next, okay, is to get them actually doing driver training, you know, out on the street. Like all of us did when we learned how to drive.
Well, you know? Santa Rosa doesn't do anything.
I know. I mean, we're, you know, one step at a time, okay?
Baby steps.
And then maybe eventually we could actually have, I don't know, a road driving test when you get your license.
Like a real one.
You know,
like a real world.
These are the things that just amaze me, absolutely amaze me. So anyway, this is a good first step. This is a good first step. So that's good. You know, with all of the talk about the, I really do. I hate propaganda. And I hate propaganda whether it's, you know, the Big Beautiful Bill or whether it's, you know, the Health Care Act to save all health care acts. You know, just, I don't care. I just don't like these names that when I say them, I become part of the slant, you know? So I'll just say the tax bill, okay? But some of the elements of this tax bill, I'd been paying some attention, and we don't know which ones of these are going to hang after the Senate likely votes on a different version of this bill, right? They're not going to pass all this stuff, and then it's going to be a question of what they can fix. We've talked extensively about the no tax on tips, which, again, my basic view of is, as a guy who used to be a waiter, I don't understand why one class of income is separated for not being taxed. It doesn't make sense to me. It's pandering. And it's expensive. It is really, really expensive to give away no tax on tips up to $25,000. But there is also a no tax on overtime. No tax on overtime. Again, why? Like, what is it about overtime that makes it immune to being taxed? Now, it's a weird kind of sense in which you might say that if people are working really, really hard, then you shouldn't tax them more. But what about somebody with a second job? I mean, you know, same argument could be made. If you're working 30 hours here and 20 hours there, we should only tax you on your first 40 hours of work. We punish you because you're dumb enough to work two jobs at base pay, and we reward the guy over here who's got an employer who's stressed out under employees, and they got to give you overtime. I mean, you know, like they're already paying you time and a half, and now they're not going to. It's not that I want people to pay a lot of income tax. I just don't like the pandering. I don't like the separating. I mean, once we're going to have income tax, let's have income tax. I mean, if it were my way, it'd be a flat income tax. There'd be no, you know, everybody would pay 20% or 10% or 15 or whatever the number would be. And you wouldn't have to pay more just because you earn more and all the other things that go into it. But anyway, that's one of the things in there. That's a very expensive one, too. The state and local tax exemption, it drives me crazy. We've talked about this many times. You understand how this works, that people in New York pay less tax because they live in New York and they have high taxes. That has now quadrupled from $10,000 to $40,000. That is essentially a $10,000 a year gift to people in New York and California and Chicago. That's basically what that is, because they're in the 30-32% tax bracket. So $30,000 differential is about a 10%. Anyway. All right. I'm done. Just things I note for now. Coming up next, why would the Secretary of Defense be praised for his decision about the United States naval ship Harvey Milk? We'll tell you about that in the Transgressive Memorial Service. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Still rolling accident-free right now. Looks like I-10, I-110 are flowing very smoothly, not seeing any delays on 90, 98, or even 29. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Delicious seafood is what you'll find at Davis Catfish House. Davis Catfish serves only the best Mississippi catfish, fresh Gulf seafood, and delicious homemade sides. Weekday specials include two times Tuesday, six free shrimp added to the six-piece dinner. Wednesdays offer lunch basket specials. And everybody's favorite, Shrimp-tastic Thursday, $5 off all-you-can-eat shrimp. Serving fresh seafood daily, visit David's Catfish House on Dogwood Drive in Milton. See you at David's.
Spring cleaning and remodeling is in the air, and at Jonathan's Flooring, you can get your beautiful luxury vinyl plank flooring with the texture of wood, waterproof, and longer lasting. Jonathan's Flooring offers the most affordable pricing, first-class workmanship and installation with a large selection of tile, carpet, and the latest in luxury vinyl plank flooring. Performance and sustainability is what makes Jonathan's Flooring the best choice for your floors this spring. Stop by Jonathan's Flooring, North Palafox, south of 9 Mile Road.
When a storm is brewing, you need reliable information at your fingertips. Tune in to News Radio 92.3 for comprehensive hurricane coverage you can count on. Our team of anchors and reporters are in studio and at the County Emergency Operations Centers, bringing you live updates, safety tips, and emergency resources. From storm tracking to storm information, we've got you covered. Stay informed, stay safe. When the winds pick up, we're right there with you. News Radio 92.3, your trusted source during hurricane season.
News Radio Pensacola has a team of experienced and award-winning journalists dedicated to bringing you the most accurate and up-to-date news coverage. Informative, local, dependable.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Good news, dear Otherin. This week is an all-positive, praise-only report. So lift your peace sign fingers in my direction, both fingers please, as we celebrate the wonderful work being done by wokelings around the country. First, the San Francisco United School District, or SFUSD, which this week indicated their intent to implement a massive grade inflation scheme in order to remedy the past injustices of our educational system. This plan calls for recalibrating the grade scale so that 80% and up will become an A, 60 and up a B, 41 a C, and anyone earning at least 21% would still be given at least a D grade. Furthermore, tardiness, absenteeism, and failure to turn in assignments will no longer count against a student. Instead, they'll be graded entirely on a final exam, which they can take multiple times until they guess as many right answers as they desire. This is all because of the wonderful work being done by the innovative educational pioneer Joe Feldman, who calls this bold new plan Grading for Equity. As Feldman writes, quote, "Grading for Equity de-emphasizes the importance of timely performance, assignment completion, and consistent attendance," end quote. Which of course makes sense since, as we all know, showing up on time, or at all, performing assigned work correctly, or at all, and generally speaking, everything about traditional school structures is really just white supremacy culture perpetuated upon the oppressed through the patriarchal education system. Even our newest inductees know such basic stuff, wokelings. Now, the one sad note here, is that the SFUSD receives so much blowback from the unenlightened and, given that it's San Francisco, likely unwashed masses, is that they abruptly reversed course just 24 hours after the announcement and abandoned grading for equity. But non-lethal rubber rounds fired. The fact that someone even tried to implement this is a major victory. After all, something similar has already been tried in Chicago, where schools with predominantly black and brown student populations have been allowed to redo assignments repeatedly and submit them late ever since COVID. And even if they don't complete the assignment or show up for class, they still get a 50% under a system called no-zero grading. This blend of race-based standard lowering, self-esteem pandering, and implementing equity by eradicating accountability is just a joy to see. The only thing we could imagine that might be better would be to just ask the students what they prefer to do with their days, such as play video games or eat ice cream. Let them do that, and then give them all A's for hitting their self-directed educational objectives. Just imagine how much those kids could accomplish with all the self-esteem and intellectual obesity we would be cultivating. So whether it's a quickly abandoned scheme for grade hyperinflation in San Francisco or an already implemented policy of non-judgment and inclusion in Chicago, we celebrate the educational reform efforts to make a kinder, gentler, and more easily manipulated populace. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, the state of Oregon. For passing a bill that makes it, the state of Hawaii, for passing a bill that makes it illegal to create political satire using images that, quote, harm the reputation or electoral prospects of a candidate in an election or change the voting behavior of voters in an election. Now, yes, this was originally meant to solve the so-called problem of deep fake videos that create hyper-realistic representations of politicians saying things they never said. Of course, we are not worried by deepfakes, since we don't believe in truth in the first place. Everything is a lie, it's only a question of whether the lie advances our quest for power or someone else's. We believe in relativism, the truth being defined differently by each individual person, whether it's morals, religion, sexuality, art, politics, or anything else. So of course, the idea of indistinguishable fakes doesn't bother us at all, as long as it's our lies that win in the end. But of course, in the process of banning deepfake political messaging, the Hawaii law bans virtually all satire using images, Photoshop, AI, or even political cartoons, which are notoriously not realistic at all. And that's why the conservative satire site, the Babylon Bee, is being represented by Alliance Defending Freedom in an effort to thwart this very good law in Hawaii. The law would require large disclaimers on any non-factual material, which would, of course, rob such content of its comedic effect. For some reason, it's hard to laugh at satire while the satire itself is being forced to tell you loudly to be aware that it's satire. Of course, we love the idea of trying to censor political satire, whether pictorial or word-based, for precisely the fact that revolution and comedy cannot coexist. I mean, ask yourself, when was the last time you met a freedom fighter with great jokes? You can only lead the Reformation if you're serious about it. After all, we know that comedy is just a tool of the oppressor to make you laugh at injustice so you end up doing nothing to actually fix it. As Flanagan's third postulate on the evils of humor teaches us, comedy perpetuates the violence inherent in the system by making you laugh at the evils of the system. And when you're laughing, you're not raging, for only those who rage create change. Wise words. Also, satire, like comedy in general, works on the basis of logic, pointing out irrationality through the use of exaggerations of truth. But dear other, and surely you know by now that our political movement cannot long last in the presence of a population that's any good at logic. Only the highly irrational can be manipulated into being on our side. That's one of the reasons why we love Saturday Night Live so much. It's fully approved as a tool for promoting our values precisely because it's so enthusiastically inaccurate and therefore unfunny. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, a triple denim tambourine with paisley tassels and bedazzled hemp streamers for Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, for indicating that the Pentagon plans to change the name of the naval ship Harvey Milk, a John Lewis-class replenishment oiler, named for the famously gay San Francisco activist and martyr. Now look, I know a lot of you were scandalized by this news, released with obvious malice during the single gayest month of the year, Pride Month. And yes, clearly Hegseth is just continuing his wicked persecution of all our dearly beloved Rainbow Otherin and generally people of the holy acronym string who serve in the military. And yes, this means losing the symbolic delight of having the only Navy ship name for an openly homosexual man also be one whose primary mission is to deposit vital fluids into other ships underway. But you're missing the bigger issue here. By this unnaming, we've won. The fight between those of us who believe in changing names based on the most recent waft of political wind and those who scream about these name changes is over. You see, when we forced the rebranding of everything from Aunt Jemima to Columbus Day to Fort Hood and Mount McKinley in order to virtue scrub our world of unjust names, the other side said we were engaging in Orwellian historical revisionism and alleged we were washing away the past. Well, now the same people who objected to taking down Confederate monuments and renaming Squaw Peak are celebrating the unnaming of the USNS Harvey Milk. And we're glad for it. They're clearly showing that they actually agree with us about the most important thing. Not gay rights, but the idea that language and names and monuments should constantly be changing to reflect our values of the day. Whether it's name changes in our direction like the Master Bedroom or Hyphenated Americans, or name changes in their direction like Milk or the Gulf of Mexico is irrelevant. We've all embraced the normalcy of name changes. And this means now we can no longer waste time pretending that people really oppose name changes in principle. They just oppose name changes they disagree with. Which means the fight is now entirely on our terms. And just think about what this means for when we're back in power in the White House. We can do anything we want with the names of monuments and ships and bases and mountains. In fact, if we want to begin to inflict our own unique brand of irrationality on the military, we can. Just like we already have the littoral combat ship, USS Gabby Giffords, named for an anti-gun activist and equipped with strike missiles and attack drones. Perhaps we can force the Navy to sail to war under the names of the anti-war pacifists we so deeply admire. You know, those who live by the motto, "War is not the answer," while inhabiting a warship. We could commission the John Lennon class of guided missile cruisers featuring the USS Dalai Lama, the Martin Luther King Jr., the Leo Tolstoy, and the Mahatma Gandhi. We did think that the USS Yoko Ono could be in this class, but then we thought her name might more appropriately go on something like a mine layer or an icebreaker or perhaps just any kind of destroyer. We could also have a class name for people who actually protested against the United States during war, the John Kerry class of SSNs or fast attack subs, the USS Jane Fonda, the Tom Hayden, the Abby Hoffman, the Muhammad Ali, or the USS Joan Baez. What better mixed message could we possibly send to our sailors than by shipping to sea wearing olive branches and ship mottos like "Make Love, Not War," as they go merrily off to make war, not love, on ships named for pacifists and anti-war activists. So perfect. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sisterin, and otherin, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
627 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. If you came in late to the early service, you can always catch the late service at 8:20 or on the podcast page after the show's over at newsradio923.com. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
The USS Jane Fonda. I'm still...
Love you, Candy. Oh.
Okay. Oh, goodness. Okay, so we've got one accident with entries that happened at Cyanamid Road and Avalon Boulevard. There's no roadblock associated with this. It's off to the side of the road, but we're starting to see just some minor delays on Avalon going southbound. Jane Fonda. In bedazzled.
The fast attack sub, Joan yes. Baez. And I think, go ahead, John.
No. That's all. I'm good.
I do love Candy so much because she hates herself for loving the show so much. And that segment in particular. All right, Will Smith. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is in France today to commemorate the 81st anniversary of D-Day, the Allied invasion against Nazi forces that led to the end of World War II. Over 4,400 Allied soldiers were killed on D-Day, as well as thousands of German soldiers. Prosecutors in New York in the murder case against Luigi Mangione have now released copies of his alleged manifesto that they say shows his motive for killing UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. The handwritten documents were recovered following Mangione's arrest in Pennsylvania last December. They say the suspect had originally thought about planning a bombing, but decided against that to avoid bystanders being hurt. And Andrew, are you as looking forward to seeing what happens today as I am in this war between President Trump and Elon Musk?
You're gonna like this. John has a theory.
Oh, I can't. What is it, John?
Well, tell us a couple facts, and then we'll tell you the theory.
Well, of course, it all started with Musk's criticism of the big, beautiful bill. It escalated yesterday. Musk posted on X that Trump couldn't have won the election without him. Also talked about possibly impeaching Trump and
deporting,
then accused, yeah, and then accused
Musk.
Yeah, accused Trump of being in the Epstein files.
That's right. The Epstein files, taking away your government subsidies, back and forth and back and forth. And John, your theory is, you'll appreciate this, David, as a wrestler yourself.
It's for show. Keeps their name out there.
It sure does feel like a work.
They could have had lunch.
It's all a work, huh?
I mean, stay in the news cycle, baby. What is the lead story everywhere in the universe right now? The bromance breakup.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster. President Trump reportedly plans to speak with Elon Musk today. What might have started as a public disagreement over the Republican spending bill has gotten a lot more personal. Musk saying the president should be impeached and replaced. The president suggesting canceling Musk's federal contracts, saying he just went crazy.
President Trump says the reason Elon Musk is trashing the massive tax and spending package is because it eliminates a tax incentive that would benefit his company, Tesla.
And he only developed the problem when he found out that we're going to have to cut the EV mandate because that's billions and billions of dollars.
Musk firing back, saying, whatever, but quote, ditch the mountain of disgusting pork in the bill.
Fox's Ryan Schmelz. A federal judge blocks for now President Trump's ban on Harvard University's foreign students from entering the United States. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now we've got partly cloudy skies, an absolutely gorgeous Friday morning. It's 77 degrees right now. Of course, we'll get more on our weather forecast with Brooke Richardson here in just a few minutes. The Escambia Board of Commissioners approved the sale yesterday of the OLF 8 property in Beulah. The board discussed the conclusion of the years-long saga and voted yesterday at the meeting. The motion was made by District 1 Commissioner Steve Stroberger, seconded by District 5 Commissioner Stephen Barry.
Do we all want to take an operational pause before we vote? Please vote. Vote passes 5-0. Congratulations. Thank you. Wow, that gave me a warm fuzzy.
And that the conclusion of the years-long OLF 8 saga there, the 540-acre property being purchased by Tri-W Development and Chad Henderson Enterprises for $42.5 million. The deal could close as soon as next year. That is, if everything goes well with inspections and due diligence. Commissioners called it one of the biggest economic development deals in county history. Well, the community had their chance to make their opinions known on FPL's proposed rate increase yesterday.
I'm going to go home tonight and cuddle up to an ice pack because I can't afford to turn the air conditioning on.
Their attention and dedication to keeping the power on and getting it back on after national disasters around here is really a key component, and they have to have the resources to do that.
And citizens had a chance to address Florida's Public Service Commission last night at Pensacola State College. The commission will make a decision on FPL's proposed rate hike by this fall. As proposed, the average bill in Northwest Florida would go from about $143 to $151 a month by 2029. Rates would start increasing next year if that increase is approved. FPL says they need the money to invest in infrastructure around the state. Okaloosa County deputies say they've identified two potential suspects after concrete and eggs were thrown from an overpass and damaged a few vehicles yesterday. Those items were thrown from the I-10 overpass on Wilderson Bluff Road, and they hit two vehicles. Officials say, luckily, nobody was seriously hurt. Officials believe kids were the likely culprits, but they are still working to confirm that. The damaged vehicles include a box truck that had a cement block smash through its windshield and land in the cabin, and a car that was hit by debris. Investigators say they were able to track footprints from the scene and they have an idea who is responsible, but they want the people involved to come forward. They could face felony charges. A Pensacola man is sentenced to life in prison for his cousin's murder. 28-year-old Jerry Keene Foster Jr. was found guilty of first-degree premeditated murder and sentenced to life in prison Wednesday. Prosecutors say Foster shot and killed his cousin, who was 28 at the time, Jarvis Johnson, over an ongoing family dispute. Shortly after the shooting death of his cousin, Foster had been arrested for allegedly holding a woman and child hostage with a firearm. Well, discussions continue among Pensacola city officials on possible parade route changes. Yesterday, Mayor D.C. Reeves confirmed, Mayor D.C. Reeves confirmed discussions on switching lighter attended parades to run on Bayfront Parkway instead of the standard route that involves closing off a lot of downtown.
It's just something that's needed, and it's needed to be looked at for quite a while.
PPD's Mike Wood, he says placing officers at all of the required intersections to close off the standard parade route is expensive. He says PPD's been working with the mayor's office to take a look at changing some of those routes here recently. It's 6:35. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
Still dealing with that one accident that happened on Avalon and Cyanamid Road. It's a vehicle crash with injuries, but it's off to the side of the road, but I'm still seeing some delays on Avalon. I-10, I-110 are actually flowing very smoothly this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Now our Channel 3 forecast.
It is going to be a warm day today with a high near 88 degrees with a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 77. For Saturday, 30% chance of rain, high near 89. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 79 degrees. Keeping your rain chances around on Sunday with a 60% chance of rain, high near 91 degrees. Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 75. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now, we've got partly cloudy skies. It is 77 degrees in Pensacola, 76 in Gulf Breeze, 75 in Milton. Our next news at 7 o'clock. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Economists expect that the May non-farm payroll numbers will show a gain of just 125,000, down from an initial tally of 177,000 in April. The Labor Department's closely watched report is also expected to show the unemployment rate holding steady at 4.2%. Data drops at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Tesla shares have climbed more than 5% in pre-market trading, recovering slightly after a 14% plunge a day earlier. The electric vehicle maker lost $152 billion in market capitalization yesterday as traders reacted to a public feud between CEO Elon Musk and President Trump. Sodexo Live, the global hospitality company that has provided food and beverage services at Caesars Superdome and the Smoothie King Center for decades, is being replaced by a new vendor beginning next month. The company will be replaced by Legends, the hospitality arm of ASM Global. Futures are slightly higher ahead of inflation data later this morning. That's your money now.
Texting enrolls you in a reoccurring automated text messages. Consent not required to purchase. Message and data rates may apply.
Feeling like you've lost a step? You're not alone. After 35, most men start losing free testosterone, the hormone that helps you stay lean, strong, and energized. But now there's a game-changing solution. Nugenix Total T2, the next generation testosterone booster from the number one brand in America. Nugenix Total T2 is packed with even more man-boosting power, and it works fast. With a powerful nitric oxide booster, it sends your energy and performance levels skyrocketing in just 3 hours. That's right, just 3 hours. Hours to start feeling like your old self again. For a limited time, you can try it for yourself absolutely free. Text now to get a complimentary bottle of Nugenix Total T2, the number one selling testosterone brand at GNC. But that's not all. When you send us a text, we'll also include a free bottle of Nugenix Thermo X, our most powerful fat incinerator ever. Feel stronger, leaner, more driven. Text PRIDE to 369-369 now. That's PRIDE to 369-369. Text PRIDE to 369-369.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do, and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli, where you can meet up and wine all you want. Costello's has all your barbecue needs ready for pickup, from Wagyu tomahawks, Wagyu chuck steaks, to quarter pound colossal Wagyu hot dogs, briskets, pork butts, and so much more. At Costello's, you'll find all the best boarhead sandwich meats and cheeses, plus everything ready from charcuterie boards to chicken salad and the best dessert pies, all at Costello's Butcher Shop, Deli, Fine Wine, and Cheeses. Find them today on the corner of Lillian Highway and Fairfield Drive in Pensacola.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic, but don't have a radio nearby? Then you need to download our new app. With the News Radio Pensacola app, you can get text alerts for breaking news, severe weather, and traffic delays. Plus, customize your alerts so you only get the information you need. It's easy to sign up for text alerts. Just download our app, create an account, and select the alerts you want to receive. You can even change your settings at any time. So what are you waiting for? Download the News Radio Pensacola app today and start getting text alerts.
Shake your money maker like somebody about to pay you. I see you on my radar, don't you act like you afraid of shh.
You know I got it, if you wanna come get it, stand next to this money like hey, hey, hey.
Shake your money maker like somebody.
I'm trying to picture State Representative Alex Andrade, who's a good friend, in the club. Living his best life with this music on, but I also try not to sometimes imagine things. Alex, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
I suppose just as dangerous for people to imagine me doing that too. So, you know, fine, whatever. We'll just leave that alone. I definitely want to talk about the budget with you. There's a lot of things at the state level that's going on, and we like to have you on during session. Of course, now we have like overtime extra innings with you this year because of, you know, all of the on again, off again stuff. But before we get to that, the Baptist demolition and reconstruction deal that, of course, was a big subject of the meeting yesterday, the committee, the whole meeting in Escambia County. By my read, commissioners basically decided not to decide anything. They're going to go back and work on it and come up with other ways out of the general revenue to find the $2 million, then out of general revenue. But there was a lot of wrangling and a lot of hand-wringing and a lot of, you know, calling of, you know, corporate bailouts and things like this. Anyway, we'll cover that more on Monday. But the one thing that came out that I was interested in hearing from you on is Mike Kohler had made the comment that the money is there, $7 million from the state, if I'm not mistaken, and it will be there for quite a while, that there's not really a sense of imminent urgency to get this done from the state money perspective. Is that correct?
Well, the only reason the money would have gone away is if the city hadn't actually taken the land.
Okay.
Like my one requirement, I mean, like I wanted a commitment from the city to take the land before we got this money. And obviously that didn't happen. But if we'd gone another year and the city had still not taken the land and executed this donation agreement, I likely probably would have pulled the money this year, but because they did that, I didn't.
Okay.
So the money's there for another, you know, year or so. I mean, since they've executed the demolition agreement, I believe they've already executed the demolition agreement after the RFP.
I think that's not been signed. I think they're still wrangling some of that because that was – but I could be wrong. I could be wrong. That might have been also, that might have been executed too. I could be wrong about that. I think it's just the Baptist agreement that's been, you know, with them. So,
the bottom line for me, though, is, I mean, they went through the procurement process. They've selected an awardee. And so, yeah, if we're coming back in the session next year and – no work, no progress has been made, then maybe I do look for other uses for that money, but I don't think that's the case at this point, and nothing is contingent on anything the county would do.
Got it. Okay, very good. Second question, just kind of a detailed question. Somebody had asked me, when is the hurricane supplies tax holiday this year? It was my understanding that we do not have one this year. It wasn't budgeted for last year, right?
Well, we've had hurricane preparedness tax holidays, and we're in the current year's budget. This next year's budget, I don't believe, would have any effect on anything until July. So we may have some hurricane preparedness tax holidays later on this year once our tax package is finalized and passed and signed. But, no, nothing right now is contingent on what we're negotiating.
Okay, but there wasn't one made last year, and, you know, anyway, and there isn't one yet set for this year because that budget is still not done, which brings us to kind of the big topic, which is we're back on in terms of budget negotiations. When are you guys going back to Tallahassee?
I've been in Tallahassee all week this week.
Oh, okay.
So we've been negotiating the budget this week. I've been negotiating the healthcare budget, and we're done now publicly going back and forth making offers, and we've technically bumped, meaning we've like declared an impasse on a few final items. But I'm still here, at least for today, working on kind of informal offers back and forth to see if we can get some more things hashed out.
All right, well, let's talk about the shape of that in just a second. We're talking to Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2 in the Tallahassee in the House. John Pickens has traffic on the 5s. John?
That's right. We're back to rolling accident-free right now. I-10, I-110 look good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5s.
Thanks, traffic on the 5s guy. That's what all the folks in the Santa Rosa County EOC called him yesterday. It was hilarious. All right, Alex Andrade, our state representative for District 2. What's now actually happening in the budget? You know, there have been all kinds of talks about property taxes, about sales taxes, about, defunding this, extra funding that. I mean, what are we actually going to see in this budget that's interesting?
That's interesting. Well, we have what's called proviso, like language that's tied to, specific line items in our spreadsheet budget. Yesterday I proposed, and we'll see if the Senate agrees to it, provides a language that withholds the Secretary of ACA's salary until they execute an actual data sharing agreement with the legislature so that we can actually review how they are financially monitoring the Medicaid managed care plans. And then we have something similar in DCF related to SNAP. We discovered recently that DCF has not done a very good job of managing our SNAP program, our food assistance program, and the error rates have been so high that we're actually at threat of federal withholds for that program. So because it's a core function of what DCF does, we have some enforcement mechanisms in the new proviso language saying if you can't get the error rate under control, we're going to dock your pay. So there's a lot of monitoring reports that are required, that are going to be required this coming year in our budget. I think we just need to kind of like right size the ship as far as our oversight on behalf of the legislature.
Wow. And I know, you know, you as sitting in charge of the Healthcare Appropriations Committee, the largest Appropriations Committee, you know, we had talked previously about these, you know, millions of dollars that you had found that were, you know, poorly accounted for, not accounted for, misused for, you know, paying people that weren't supposed to be getting that. I mean, all kinds of stuff. Have you gotten a grasp on that, or is this step one, making the ACA secretary's income dependent on sharing the information you would need to really get a grasp around that stuff? Is that where this is going, or did you already get some of these solutions?
No, we're it's like pulling teeth. Like I can't still, largely because the governor's office has told a lot of these folks not to talk to me. Yesterday was a running joke that the secretary of ACA would not call me back. Or would not call me. She'd call everybody else in the legislature about her budget issues with me, but she would not call me. So it's a weird dynamic. I think you have some petty politics going on. But no, I mean, a lot of stuff in our budget is just, you know, new accountability, new monitoring. We have funding. We haven't really affected much funding other than – we're still, one of the things we didn't pass on was FTEs, just how many FTEs to cut from different agencies. The Senate agrees that we do need to make some cuts on vacant FTEs, like employment positions that haven't been filled for a year or even more.
Because that was the kind of slush money that was used to pay other people doing the jobs that the FTEs were supposed to do, right? That's where some of that stuff had come from.
Yeah, I mean, I'm proposing cutting 1,600 vacant positions from Department of Health, just because they have not been filled for 180 days or more. I think that half a year is a good amount of time for someone to figure out that they need a position filled, and shouldn't take more than 6 months to fill a position. The Senate thinks a little bit more time is justified than 180 days vacant, but we'll come to some agreements on that. I can see light at the end of the tunnel as far as where we can reach compromise.
Okay. So I'm assuming I don't follow, these things at the state level enough on Twitter to know, but I'm guessing that you're getting called the guy who's cutting everything. You're cutting healthcare positions, you're cutting Hope Florida positions, you're cutting funding for cancer. Like, I mean, I assume this is what they're saying, right?
Yeah. The DeSantis bots and even some spouses of legislators have accused me of cutting cancer funding. Because I'm not giving more money on top of base amounts of money for cancer funding, and there have been articles. I can understand why reporters might want some drama, but me not agreeing to fund $30 million in additional funds on top of the $60 million Casey DeSantis Research Fund is not the same thing as me cutting cancer funding. We've had $60 million in this cancer research fund for 2 years now. I just don't think that their budget should be increased by 50% on one specific cancer research funding program when we have some extremely successful cancer research funding programs that are receiving $130 million that have a very well-established track record. Some of these programs like the Hope Florida Navigators. I'm not proposing cutting any Hope Florida Navigators that are currently employed. I just don't think we should create more slots for more Hope Navigators when the governor's office and state agencies keep telling me and can't decide if it's if Hope Florida is like a movement or a philosophy or what it actually is. It's just state employees, being told to do a better job on case management. Until I can figure out why we need more and what it actually is doing that's different than what state employees are always doing, I didn't think it needed more millions of dollars in funding.
Last thing before we let you go, we're talking to Alex Andrade. On the property tax and sales tax, that had been kind of the original impasse. The House wanted to give people back a sales tax decrease. The governor, of course, has been pushing for kind of a payment plan back for homesteaders' property tax and a push for an amendment to vote on eliminating property taxes. Where are we at on either of those?
Well, property tax are expected to be on the ballot next election.
Oh, okay.
While we haven't passed the joint resolution, we have a whole other session before anything would go on the ballot anyway.
Right.
As far as sales tax, I believe the negotiated agreement, I haven't seen the tax package yet. I believe the negotiated agreement includes some cuts to sales tax, but it also includes this really novel concept about increasing our budget stabilization fund, which in and of itself requires a constitutional amendment. But if this constitutional amendment were to pass next election, our budget stabilization fund would go from up to 10% of annual revenue to 25% of annual revenue. And it would also require the legislature to move $750 million a year into the budget stabilization fund until it reaches that 25% threshold. And that fund, it has been used in the past. I believe that over $1 billion was drawn down during the 2008 crisis. But it can be used during times where we might see a shortfall. And so it's good financial policy to have a rainy day fund. It's a good idea to increase it from 10%. And I think it has the same effect of we're reining in our spending so that, you know, we don't continue these astronomical increases in spending that we've seen over the past 6 years.
So that would be, I'm just quick math, that would be pushing it from somewhere in the, what, 10 or 11 billion reserve fund to more in the 25 to 30 billion dollar reserve fund. Am I about right for the state budget?
Yeah, and it could never go below 10.
Okay.
So it would get into that range, and then we'd always have a backup of about $10 billion in the account.
Got it. Well, we'll look forward to the details. Thank you for being in Tallahassee and wrangling all this stuff out. Of course, anything you do or anything that both houses do could eventually be, or both chambers could eventually be vetoed by the governor. So we have all of that fun to anticipate. But Alex Andrade, he's our state representative for District 2. Thanks for the time this morning. I always appreciate it. So we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Andrew.
You bet. 6:55 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you have a company, you have benefits because you have employees, you have to manage HR and payroll and health and dental and vision and life and all of that stuff, disability. And if it's doing great, great. I don't want to try to, you know, fix something that ain't broken. But if what you're doing right now isn't serving your employees particularly well, or it's too expensive, or you have people griping about it, or you just don't have anything good in place, hey, give Torgerson Causey a call. They're locally owned and operated for more than two decades, helping business owners just like you make this work. And, you know, we've been using them here at Cat Country and News Radio for a little over 4 years, and they have been fantastic. Plans we didn't have before, choices we didn't have before. I mean, they're not miracle workers. The market is what it is. It's terrible. But they make the best of the terrible that can be made of it. And I appreciate that. Plus, they're great with customer service. We have questions. They have answers. They're very prompt and get back to us quickly. So we're big fans. My wife and I. 433-9996 for Torgerson Causey, or check them out online at tcbenefitsgroup.com. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. We're back accident-free right now. I-10, I-110, Highway 90, Highway 29. Even 9 Mile are flowing smoothly this morning. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Culver's knows that everyone appreciates a fresh meal that comes from the heart. Culver's Butterburger begins as fresh, never frozen beef, seared to perfection, then topped with real Wisconsin cheese and a lightly buttered toasted bun. It's a whole lot more than a burger. It's a taste of home. And now featuring cod sandwiches and dinners. Visit Culver's today. Mobile Highway, Bayou Boulevard, and Highway 90 in Milton. Third-party delivery is available with DoorDash and Uber Eats, and curbside service is now available. Culver's, welcome to delicious.
Tune in Tuesday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel as Regeneration Station will be here discussing how they can help individuals relieve severe pain through their latest in Scalar and Biophotonic Energy Room. This can allow cell regeneration, improve immune function, detoxify the body, elevate moods, and assist in balancing right and left hemispheres of the brain to increase energy levels. It's the Regeneration Station, Tuesday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Here are the News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 contest rules. You can win one prize per household per contest in any 30-day period, unless specified by individual contest rules. All prizes on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 are non-transferable, non-redeemable for cash, or exchangeable for any other prize. News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 prizes must be redeemed within a 30-day period of winning. For a complete list of rules, visit newsradio923.com.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings before Pep Talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
The new pet.
Tia.
Tia Pet, the pottery that grows.
Good morning, 6:58 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning, gentlemen. A federal judge temporarily blocking President Trump's proclamation that blocks visas for foreign students planning to attend Harvard. That block is in effect until after a hearing later this month. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is in France today commemorating the 81st anniversary of D-Day, the Allied invasion against Nazi forces that led to the end of World War II. And transgender members of the military have a big deadline today. Active duty troops have to leave voluntarily or they risk being discharged under the Trump administration's reinstated ban. Reserve members have until tomorrow.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. You know, when I think about the Normandy invasion, this is one of those historical events that just it overwhelms me to think about, because here you have all of these men, all of these forces massing in a secret operation to throw their lives desperately against this incredibly well-defended beach and sacrifice so many lives just to get a land foothold so that we could basically climb up into France and start to push in against Germany. And if it hadn't been done, the swastika would be flying over Europe. It wouldn't be the EU, it'd be the Nazi Union, you know? Like, and the level of sacrifice that it took and the risk and the danger and the willingness to spend those lives to do this 80 years ago, 81 years ago, it's mind-boggling. Thank you to all.
Local talk in the